Where did the pressure come from to
from the men of us, from the men of us.
Did the women organize themselves as a separate...
I guess not, no. From the branches themselves, the fathers putting on pressure that they should be abolished because our interests are not different from the men and we want to be together so we can discuss matters, problems of shops, prices and all that.
So you interpreted having the ladies' branches separate as a discrimination against the women?
Oh yeah, yeah, of course.
Because in the amalgamated, in some cities they formed women's locals as a way for women to start getting power because they were never elected to offices if they were in the men's local, mixed with the men, but when they had their own locals, they had to have
that.
Representatives.
That
was about 1920 they started forming women's locals. And this is sort of the opposite of where you have the...
Maybe they didn't do the different... In the production, there are various branches. Maybe they were connected with a different branch than the men.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were doing the same kind of work. So the branches were actually only voting. They couldn't make any decision. Then they used to count up all the votes and establish whether majority or minority, whether it was approved by the women or not. So it was a struggle. Didn't get it very easy. But then the men realized that the women are just as capable, and a few women came in into the leadership and the executive, and they knew that they don't have to have the branches.
Mm.
So it was for my time that the branches were abolished, and we participated. The women, let's see, within an executive of 25, there would be 10 women, or 8 or 10 women, which was in the later years.
Oh, that was later?
Yes.
This wasn't, so by 1920 the women still worked
yes.
in?
By 1920 the struggle started.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1920, I was already active in 21 when the left wing was becoming very active and had a great influence. So we put up a slate. And I was elected to be executive and I was a delegate to a convention in Cleveland.
That was 1921?
1922.
Mm-hmm.
So in 21 the elections took place. But in 22 the left wing movement was already on the upgrade and very influential. At this convention in 1922, there was about 70 left-wingers.
Out of how many were at the convention altogether?
Oh, a couple of hundred.
So you were a pretty small group still?
No, I wouldn't say. In some industries, in the clockmaker industry, the dressmakers were outstanding. And so we succeeded in having 70 delegates, a lot. But at that convention, they were expelled for being left-wingers. And they used these stool pigeons to come and say, this one is a communist, I was with him to a meeting. And so they had this guy, there was always a committee by a convention to look for the credentials, to approve the delegate or not. One stool pigeon from the locker where I belonged pointed out the left fingers, and they were expelled from the convention, they weren't admitted.
Even though you had been elected by your local.
Right.
And what happened then?
And then the struggle started up to 25. From 25, they tried to reorganize the union, take away the charter from the locals and reorganize the locals until it came to a point where the members stopped paying dues, and they organized the, what was the name of that committee? Joint Action Committee was organized, yeah. In 1925, the Joint Action Committee was organized.
And what was the purpose of that?
That was the purpose of fighting the right fingers, because they expelled the left fingers from the unions. And they sent in a committee, from the general executive, sent in a committee to the local. If they had a set of rules, if the local didn't accept them, the local was expelled. And one time, the men thought that the local itself should expel the left fingers. So,
in your local, what was the proportion of the left wingers, would you say, by that time?
Yeah, the activists?
Mm-hmm.
The activists must have been about 100, maybe more, but they had the support of the members. They were elected by the members, and the general executive sent in a committee to see that special communists should be expelled. So I and a group of others were expelled, and we were not from the executive, expelled from the, not from the union, from the executive, for 2 years, not to hold office. So with all these repressions that went on, it came to a time when they expelled all locals. When the center committee, for instance, the local where I was, the executive didn't want to accept it. So they're not then, so they would be expelled. In order to remain as a nucleus of a progressive group in the international, they decided to remain in office and expelled only those that were known to be communists. So I was one of them. But then in 1925 already, the total was so high, it reached such a pitch that these locals that were organized, that were expelled, organized a joint action committee. So the decision was not to pay any dues, not to obey any orders. It wasn't the industrial union was an outgrowth
of
this committee, yeah. But during that time, they used to call big demonstrations and big meetings and bad resolutions. But in the shops, conditions began to deteriorate because of that story.
Within the shop itself, how did the struggle affect what happened in the shop?
It must have affected because of you had nobody to go to if you were discriminated or you were not paid the right. So the shop itself used to take care. The workers of the shop used to take care of it. And of course in every shop there were different of opinions too.
So
some people didn't agree. But after a period of about 2 months, there was a movement to get together and make peace. But the same year, there was called a special convention where we reached an agreement. And the locals were reinstated, charters were reinstated, and at a certain point, I can't remember exactly what it was, but my point was that there was a special convention to get together both factions and try to work together.
By this time, the industrial union...
No.
It still hadn't formed.
No, it still hadn't formed. It took a couple of years. But right after the agreement was signed, they began to break it. We had new elections, and in the elections, the left fingers were again elected. And during that summer, we had a general strike. All the clockmakers joined board the left fingers. They gave leadership. So they called a general strike. I don't remember, they put out demands for the 40-hour week that time.
At that time, how long you were working for?
1926, that was the strike that the left wingers led. It was led by the officers that were elected on the program of election.
By that time, what were you working on? Was it down to 48 yet or not?
I think it was down to 48, but that time we won 40 hours. And an increase in wages, I suppose, and other conditions. But that strike was sabotaged by the right wingers. They actually, I wouldn't say they forced, but they influenced the industry not to settle. So the strike lasted a whole season. And of course the workers were desperate. And still in all, the bosses were forced to settle with that union. As soon as they settled with that union, they began to undermine conditions and expelling the locals. So if have you ever heard that they took over the locals with gangsters?
Mm-hmm.
And the members were watching all day and all night, especially Local 22 pressmakers. And gradually they began to expel the locals from the clockmakers union too. That was in 1926, 27, 28, the end of 28. It was organized in those areas. After then, they tried to work within the union. Then they decided, and that was, I don't know, when you look back, maybe it was a mistake.
They have formed industrial union?
Industrial union.
Why do you think that?
Well, they were the left wingers, you know, the world, the society looks at them. When they organized the union, unless they had control over the whole shop, so the boss gave them an agreement. But if it was a mixed element, a little bit of the right wingers and the left wingers, so it was a struggle between the workers. Until conditions deteriorated to nothing, there was no control at all.
So in other words, in terms of the benefits within the shop itself, having the two
fighting each other for the best benefited by it, so I don't know whether it was the best policy, but it seems that the leadership agreed that unless they want to give up altogether the fight, to remain in the union and not say anything. The industrial union was organized, so it was two separate unions. They had an agreement, we had an agreement, the industrial union had an agreement.
Within a single shop, for instance, the owner might have an agreement with each of the unions?
No.
Or usually a shop with one or the other?
Shop was with one or the other.
Now, wasn't it harder for the left wingers to get an employer to make an agreement with them?
Of course it was harder, naturally. And then they started sending down individual workers. 2-3 workers would lose the job unless they joined their union. And then these 2-3 workers came back to the industrial union. They lost their job. They need work. They have to make a living. And sometimes it was felt that the union is strong enough to put up a fight, so they would put up pickets, and that was bad, because they could run the job. That's why I say that maybe it wasn't the best tactic, because people were suffering an awful lot.
This was right before the Depression.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the Depression came in. The Depression came, it was terrible. I remember I happened to have an approach to workers that they agreed. Some of the workers from my local, it was a field work, and they couldn't do anything else. An operator could work on meat goods, he could work on other branches of the industry, but a finisher had to do his work, because he's a skilled worker, he's not used to do anything else. So it came to a time when gradually our local began to go back to the international. Because you'd come into a shop and the boss was asking for a union book, or the workers were asking for a union book, and they didn't have it. Yeah, the union book from the industrial union, which is not recognized. So the men, especially family people, they have responsibility to their family, is to go in and register on the protest, on whatever conditions, but they have to go to work. So I remember they used to come to me, a lot of them, to talk things out. How should they do it? How will they do it? And also a lot of them suffer that terribly. You know, it's not easy when you follow a certain line and you have your friends and people that follow the same ideology. So it's not easy to break up. But these men, especially the men, but a lot of the women remain to the end, to the bitter end.
But were the women usually married, so they weren't the only source of their
income? Some were married, some were, some were not.
Were you married at this time?
No. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think the women stuck with it longer? They still had to support themselves.
All of themselves. They didn't have families to support.
So there was, it was because they were single women, in other words.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. The demand was not so big on them, the responsibilities. Until very few members were left. In our local was the last one that dissolved after it was a decision to give up the industrial union.
What was your local number?
9.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you kept the same local number for the industrial union too?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. It was a dual union, actually, in the same structure. So then came the depression, that of course was bad for everybody, but for the left wing of it was worse, because they couldn't get a job. They had to have a union book. What saved the union was the NRA.
Mm.
When the NRA was proclaimed that for the law, the International was the first one. And they got, they got the best conditions that they would ever dream about it. They couldn't even dream about it, 35 hours work. But the union was built on that basis. The few that were still hanging out joined the union. I remember when I came into the union and made an application to rejoin me. They asked me why I want to join, where I want to join, so, no.
But they did let you
join. Yeah, they took in the rest, but there wasn't many left at all.
What year did you rejoin them?
Huh?
What year did you rejoin?
It must have been in 1932. Because they got a good agreement, and everyone rejoined, and then the union began to function again. Mm-hmm. But the union was absolutely stretched out. You couldn't think that they'd ever be able to have control of it again. But the time was, from 1928 to 32, were very bad 4 years for us, for the left fingers. Used to be fights in the streets. They called a strike and we would send tickets. They didn't call the strike to organize. They would add 2-3 workers. They would call them out around strike. And they would put out tickets. The same thing happened when we did. We had the workers. Call a strike, then they were forced to sign with the union.
Mm-hmm.
Then the members were forced to join the union.
Mm-hmm.
So we would call a strike if we would have enough members there. So the right fingers would sign tickets. And it's not only tickets, but it's the meetings we did out. Professional and their own.
Now, at this point, were you involved only in the industrial union, or were you also involved more directly in the party, too?
I was involved in the party, too.
Now, wasn't there a policy to keep the party affiliation quiet, though, to just at that point?
No, at that time, this party had prestige. They just the opposite. Whoever was a member of the party, you remember that, Joseph?
Yeah, right.
And the party had such prestige.
Oh, in the 30s, that was.
In the 30s,
yeah, with
sure.
The unemployed comp
sure.
Babies.
Sure.
When did you first join the party itself, then?
In 1922.
So you were already in the party during the Lovestone Foster fights?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was in later years.
Now, did you, going back a little, during the Palmer raid, you were not yet involved in anything,
no.
So that had no effect on you.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And then...
I used to go to a big meeting, let's say, when the Russian Revolution took place. So all the shouts were on an uproar, and everybody went to Madison Square Garden. So I went too, but I wasn't involved, really. Did you march too?
I'm only in New York.
Did you, at that time, many people who come from Russia thought of going back right after the revolution. Did you ever consider that?
Oh, no, I was so happy I left. But I used to dream sometimes about being back in the town. I used to suffer. I dread at that time.
When did your other members of your family finally all get over here then?
In 1912.
Oh.
Yeah.
They came to you.
My youngest sister and my brother came. My father was young. He took a different apartment. Then my elder sister got married and we remained with our father. He had an apartment for a number of years. Till another sister married.
Oh. Oh, so one by one. You stayed together as a family and then one by one?
Then by one,
they married.
That's right.
Were they involved in any union activity?
No.
How did they feel about your involvement?
In a way, they liked it. My father used to appreciate it. My father died in 1930. So my father liked it. But my sisters weren't involved at all.
Well, did they work in non-union
shops? They didn't work much. They didn't work. My elder sister got married maybe 2 years after I was here.
Oh.
And then my younger sister worked in a shop. She worked together with me. But she also married and wasn't involved in anything. My younger sister worked very little. She finished school and married.
And how about your brother?
My brother was killed in 1917 in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was about 17 years old.
Oh. And your father was in a non-union shop?
My father was a union man.
But he wasn't?
He wasn't the amalgamated.
Oh.
He wasn't the international.
Was he involved at all or just the union man?
No, just the union man.
So then you were the only one in the family that really got involved in the progressive movement?
I don't know why, maybe because I wasn't influential enough. But the families began to grow and, poor people, poor families, women especially, had no chance. My youngest sister was in business, her husband was a clerk in a grocery store. He got a store of his own. So they lived their life in Brooklyn after their retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think my sister ever saw America.
And when did you marry then?
I married Joseph in 1943.
Was there pressure on you to marry earlier?
No, because I was all by myself. My father was so many different periods. My father was unemployed in 1913. He had to go away from New York to look for work. And the three girls remained in New York. So that there couldn't be any pressure. My sisters were younger than I was. And my father, as I said before, he ran away. Then he came back and we were together in an apartment until my younger sister married. Then we decided that I felt that I wanted more to live by myself and more very free. my father and my brother went to live with my sister. And I lived in a car for a bit.
Oh, where was that?
In New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in New York, yeah. In 1921 I moved into that apartment.
Is it the Unity House?
It's similar to the Unity House. Only the Unity House was only women.
Mm-hmm.
And the cooperative where I lived were men too.
Now how did the cooperative function then?
Very nice. I have very good memories from there.
Can you describe the arrangements and the living conditions?
the house was rented. And everyone that came in at the time of recommendation. Recommended by a member that lived there. There was about 60 people. And it was very well organized. There was a dining room. We had a manager who did the cook and a cook who did the cooking and the managing. We had a girl to clean the rooms. And we used to have two meals a day home, breakfast and dinner. And every dinner was like a holiday. Came in, the white tablecloths on the table, and we used to evade volunteers.
Oh, you would trade off?
Trade off, mm-hmm. Yes. But the rest of the work was paid. Mm-hmm. Only the, what you had to eat there in order to be able to keep it up. Mm-hmm. If you couldn't come, you had to notify. If not, you had to pay.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very well, and I come to think of it, it was a beautiful place.
Did you each have your own room, or you shared rooms?
Some rooms, the larger rooms, were shared,
mm-hmm.
And some were single rooms. And there was a very nice element of people.
Were most of the Union people?
Yes. It couldn't be otherwise, because at that time it was already organized. Most of them were middle grade workers.
Oh. Yeah. Was there an ideology?
Oh yeah, the story about ideology started after the, of course it was after the Russian Revolution when I moved in, but it was the fights, just going terrible fights, the socialists and the communists and the anarchists. She wanted to carry to a certain proposition, so there was differences. Yeah.
You
wanted to subscribe, let's say there was a library.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to subscribe the fire. Mm-hmm. The anarchists would say that you can't subscribe the fire because they don't agree with it. On other ideological things, there used to be an awful lot of fights.
But you all still managed to live together in every
day. Yes. Yeah. Then I went away from there in 1924. I went to California the first time.
But you were living in the cooperative when you joined the party then?
Yeah.
Now, what did that result in fights too?
No.
Mm-hmm.
There were some, as I told you, some belonged to it. So there was disagreements on various ideological points.
How did you happen to come to join the party?
Through influence. There was a... There was a write-up about two women in the world last week. Did you read it?
No.
You didn't? I'll show it to you. So, Manya was a great influence, of course.
Oh, what is your last name?
Manya Raji.
Oh.
She was active in the party, and I was active in the trade union when we met. So every time when it came to a trade union where she used to push me, you're older in the trade union movement than I am. And of course, you know, during those days, it wasn't... You used to meet people. Everyone had an ideology. You used to meet people every day, not only in the union and the co-op where I lived and all that. And especially the Soviet Union was such an accomplishment, such an story, you know. I used to know people that were in Siberia. I used to know people that were in the prisons in Russia. And the Soviet Union to them, of course it was, it still is, revolutions have a tendency that sometimes they take a side road. So I hope they didn't take the side road, but somehow you begin to doubt many times of things that are done, that you feel that you didn't see it that way. To you, a revolution was to be perfection. And it is not perfection. There are so many different reasons for it, and you begin to understand it. And you're trying to justify certain actions that on some did to you. But you're trying to justify it because you followed it and you want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time it was very easy to be influenced and attracted by it. And
so you stayed in a cooperative for 2 or 3 years then?
Yeah.
And then you came out to California?
I came out to California just for a short while, and I came back and I participated in the 1925 joint action struggles, and I was in the, when the industrial union was organized after that period of time.
Mm-hmm. Were you just visiting in California or did you work out here?
Just visiting. I was working. Mm-hmm. I could always find work where I came if there was an industry.
In San Francisco,
I worked a couple of months, and then I went back home. I liked New York. I don't know what made me. In fact, I missed it. I think I still miss it.
You were in the 30s, you went back into the union again.
Mm-hmm.
And were you involved in New York then with the unemployed councils and that sort of work in the 30s?
Yeah.
What kinds of activities did you participate in?
Organizing soup kitchens. We had a strike in Harlem. Harlem was open shop, so we organized a group to help organize it. We involved the Spanish-speaking farmers at that time. We organized a soup kitchen, just to come into the headquarters and have a meal. And for a time, I'll part of as much as possible.
Did you work throughout the Depression period, or were you... You were always able to work?
We made very little. There was a time when I could only make about $2 a day. That's how bad it was, conditions.
How did you manage to live then?
I never applied for support somehow. I don't know, I tried to manage. I was never on the list of a lease. You know, a lot of my friends were.
When you went back to New York from California, you took an apartment by yourself then?
I used to leave the girls to take an apartment together and share it.
Was there any reason that you hadn't gotten married? Had you been against marriage? Or you just
No, I wasn't against it. Just so happened. I had boyfriends.
What were some of the other, what were the developments like within the union in the 30s then?
Well, it was like a fresh beginning. It was wonderful. I remember I came home with $41. I couldn't believe my eyes. And I got the first job to the union. And that was the minimum wage. And I kept that check the whole time. $41, you know? Now it's nothing. At that time it was a lot. Yeah, the union was beginning to have control over the industry. They didn't do exactly the way the members wanted, although they had a dissatisfaction. Because the worker actually never gets what he's entitled to. But there was control, and there were union meetings, and we started to organize again, the left-wing groups, and we won an election again. But that time we were expelled.
What year was that?
In 33, 32, or 33. We had the left-wing groups. And it started to have influence on the union again. And then I left, and Well, I've worked in New York up to the 1941. I came back to California.
Oh, what brought you out to California then?
Yeah.
What brought you out?
What part?
No, what made you come out?
Various reasons, adventure, I suppose. And so I came to California. Since 1941, I'm away from New York. But up to then, I was in the executive.
Hmm.
Let's see, then Cooper was in the manager.